Welcome back to License to Spiel. I'm Carl Wonders.
And I'm Thad Haight.
Today we're going to continue our trek through the Bourne franchise with the third and, at this moment, final entry in the series, the Bourne Ultimatum.
Technically, they're always the final when they come out. Well,
that's true.
Final is last. They're always the last when they come out.
Well, yes. I mean, I think they knew they were going to make this one when they made the last one. So,
yes. They did that trend that was oh so popular in the 2000s, which was, hey, this first movie we made was really good, so let's do two connected sequels.
Mm-hmm. Looking at you, Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Or Pirates. Actually, I think Back to the Future. Back to the Future started that, though, I think.
Yeah, well, that was in the 80s, and they actually did it well.
Well, Back to the Future Part 3 came out in 1990, so...
Still, though. But I'm thinking, like, it was really common in the 2000s. Yeah.
Well, and then you had, like, Lord of the Rings, where they filmed all three of them at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess you kind of knew that was going to be three movies, because it's a trilogy going into it. But,
yeah, I mean, they weren't making Fellowship of the Ring thinking, this is a one and done, boys.
Well, they did that once before with the animated one, so...
Technically, that one is Fellowship and Two Towers.
That's true. Cram all that into like 90 minutes of animation.
And call it The Lord of the Rings.
There you go.
Even though you're only doing 2/3 of the story. But the fact that they didn't do the whole story meant that we got the amazing Rankin Bass, or is it Bass? I don't know. Return of the King with its incredibly cringy songs.
Oh, God, I forgot about that. I haven't seen that in so long.
Frodo of the Nine Fingers and the Ring of Doom.
The Minstrel of Gondor.
Frodo of the Nine Fingers and the Ring of Doom. When Bilbo found that shiny ring in Gollum's cave of gloom, he never thought that it would turn into a ring of doom. The dragons Smaug, the spiders too, the goblins, the elven king, they came to know the power of the hobbit and his ring.
Yeah, I do have that movie on my NAS, by the way.
Oh, I'm gonna have to check that out now.
It's not good.
No, but I'm still gonna check it out. All right, so the Bourne Ultimatum. I think we both said, and I actually know this because I've been editing the last two episodes, that neither of us saw the first two in the theater, and then we both saw Bourne Ultimatum when it came out, because yep. If I remember right, it was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came out, everyone was super into it. I remember stories about, is this the best action film ever made? And a lot of hyperbole like that.
I definitely would say this movie came out at the height of the Bourne phenomenon? Bourne mm-hmm. fandom? Is there a Bourne fandom?
Probably. I mean, they made two more movies, so.
Yeah, fair.
It's like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy trilogy in five parts.
I don't think I ever thought this was the best action movie ever made. I it's a decent movie, but even at the time, I remember thinking that I liked the first movie better.
Yeah, I mean, I went into it very excited. I think it's a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly wouldn't say it's a bad movie. My top line critique of it is, I remember coming out of it and thinking that it was entertaining, but I don't think I saw anything new. And it felt like they were playing the greatest hits from the other films in a lot of the cases. Maybe with the exception of the whole Waterloo Station stuff, which I thought is probably my favorite part of the movie.
I agree.
It's really well done. But in retrospect, maybe some of the James Bond stuff is to blame. But like all the stuff in Tangier, I feel like, oh, it's a rooftop chase in Tangier. I've seen that before. And the whole last act of the film is very... Again, Bourne's greatest hits, in a way. So, they're done well, but I think I wanted to see something new, and I didn't really get it from this movie.
Yeah, and that's interesting, especially considering this came out, this would have come out a year after Casino Royale. So, like, for want of a better term, the competing franchise had already, like, moved on to its gritty action phase. So, you'd think they'd want to try to one-up that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, then you had Bond reacting to this movie doing Quantum of Solace, which is, we've said many times, is a Bourne ripoff, really, in terms of style. And, you know, the same people come back. I don't have much of a problem with Paul Greengrass's style in the second movie. I think he goes way over the top with his handheld camera shaky stuff.
Yeah, I was definitely, I don't recall it being an issue for me when I saw it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But I was definitely put off by the shaky cam when watching it this time.
I mean, there's a scene early on when Paddy Considine goes to meet with Neil Daniels, and he's talking to him about Blackbriar and stuff in the restaurant, and it's just shot over the guy's shoulder, and you keep, like, losing him behind the back of some... It's just... Why? Why can't we just put a camera down and film a scene?
Yeah.
It felt deliberately shaky to me, whereas I guess the second film felt more organic, I guess. Like, they weren't shaking the camera to make it shaky. They were just hand-holding the camera in a lot of scenes, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah, but I feel like the 2000s was also a big time for shaky cam.
Oh, yeah.
Because it had just really become a thing.
Well, you finally were able to do good film work with handhelds.
Right.
I think at this point, you didn't need the big camera mags and all that stuff, because it's a lot of digital work now and stuff, which, you know, back in the day, you had to have a Steadicam to be able to walk around with that, which is its own thing. Definitely no Steadicam work in this film.
No.
But yeah, we talked about a little bit at the end of the last episode. This film picks up in Moscow after the big car chase that we had with Carl Urban, and Bourne is trying to get away and he's limping around and everything.
Yeah, I recall thinking maybe I should have rewatched the second movie before watching this one, because to you, our listener, it's fine, but to us, it's been like, I don't know, 8 months since we last recorded.
So, you know, I'm currently editing that episode, and I was joking with Thad before we hit record that I cut out a whole lot of conversation that we were having about whether Kevin McCarthy was going to be voted in as Speaker of the House. So that should tell you where we were when we recorded the last episode.
Yeah, and ironically, by the time this one hits your ears, Kevin McCarthy may no longer be Speaker of the
House. That's true, yeah. We have had an entire speakership in between two episodes of this podcast, so I refer you to the title of episode 3 of this podcast, We're Very Bad at Podcasting. So yeah, I, you know, to go back to the movie, I'm a really big fan of this idea of we're going to, you know, we had this kind of button on the last movie in New York City and everything, but we're not actually going to start there.
Yeah.
And, you know, 2/3 of the movie is basically watching Bourne get to that point where he's talking to Pam through Pam Landy through the window in New York and everything. And you know, he's injured and he gets away from the Moscow police and he's trying to take care of himself in this clinic somewhere. And once again, we get a case of Bourne's magic amnesia showing up whenever the plot demands him to remember something important, becoming a bit much, but
well, you'll be happy to know that Bourne has no amnesia flashbacks in the next Bourne movie because he's not in it.
He's not in it. I haven't seen that movie since it came out. So
same.
I'm actually looking forward to watching that one.
I saw it in the theater and I have not seen it since. That's also true for the one after it.
I was going to say, same for me with the last one. I think I saw it once and I was like, eh.
I have a more pleasant memory of seeing the Jeremy Renner one than I do of seeing the last Matt Damon one. Like, I seem to recall the last Matt Damon one was not very good, whereas the Jeremy Renner one I thought was fine.
Yeah, the Jeremy Renner one, I remember thinking that at least it was, they were doing something different. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't, you know, then the last one just felt like a retread.
Yeah.
That wasn't needed. But yeah, Bourne's having flashbacks to this, like, weird torture situation that he was involved in. And we have creepy voiceover from Albert Finney here.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know it's Albert Finney yet, but...
I mean...
It sounds like Albert Finney.
It sounds like Albert Finney.
Albert Finney showed up at the end of a lot of movies in this time. So we cut to yet another CIA meeting. We weirdly have yet another CIA director now.
Yep.
Who's not the guy from last movie.
No. And I forgot to look up who this actor is, but he's a total that guy.
It's Scott Glenn.
Doesn't yep. mean anything to me.
Okay. The thing I think you might know him from is he played Alan Shepard in The Right Stuff.
Ah, yes. That's correct.
So, he'd been, like you said, he's a that guy, mm-hmm. but that's the most notable thing I can think of.
Yeah, correct in that. That is what I okay. remember him from.
Okay.
I mean, I assume he did other movies in the, you know, 30 years between those two.
Yes. We're having yet another debriefing about, we think this is what happened, and especially Joan Allen here is saying this is what happened, and they're not believing her.
Yep.
No, clearly Jason Bourne is up to no good here, and despite having recorded evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, like, at no point has Bourne done, but anyway.
Yeah, no. We cut to somewhere in Italy where we see King Viserys sitting down to a lunch with...
We see they label it as Turin, Italy. It's not.
Oh, do they? Okay.
It is not shrouded in secrecy.
That is okay. Fine.
Oh, come on! You gotta like at least comment that is, on that my is, terrible joke.
That your bad pun is acknowledged. Yeah, Paddy Considine shows up in this movie. This is probably the first thing I remember seeing him in. Actually,
Hot Fuzz for me.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Okay, that's right. I always forget when things come out, like, around this, you know, it's long enough ago that I've...
Hot Fuzz would have been, I think, 2006, so it would have been a year
okay.
before this.
So it would been right before, okay. He's meeting with a guy who, to me, looks like a discount John Hurd.
Yeah, kind of.
There was a period of time where I thought it was John Hurd, but it's not.
No one wants to be described as discount John Hurd, because... John Hurd surely isn't pretty, worth that
he's
much.
He's pretty discount. He's pretty discount. And yet this guy is not John Hurd, so. Maybe John Hurd was in jail at this point. I don't know.
Did he ever actually go to jail?
I don't know. He might have for a brief period of time.
I know he definitely was charged for domestic violence, but I don't know if he went to jail. I know that because I made the joke when somebody was saying that Donald Trump is the first person from Home Alone 2 to be indicted. I'm like, technically, I don't think that's true.
Yeah. No, he was just arrested and charged, but I don't think he was arrested. He was thrown in jail.
Okay. He's dead now.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't realize he had died.
Few years now, I think.
It was 71, I guess. Yeah, 71.
Last movie I saw him in, I think, was Sharknado.
Oh, that's memorable. Apparently he was married to Margot Kidder for 6 days.
I mean, that's 6 days more than I was, so.
Yeah,
someday we'll get the John Hurd biopic and we'll learn all about it.
I'm not waiting. I'm not holding my breath on that
one.
The
guy from this movie to play it.
There you go.
Anyway.
Well, there's Daniel Brühl. He shows up for about one scene and
yeah.
playing Marie's brother. I appreciate how he's kind of going around apologizing to everybody, but.
Was he in the first movie?
No.
Okay. Because, like, it's kind of like portrayed as if we should remember him from before.
Yes. But, yeah.
And it had been long enough since I last watched them that I wasn't 100% sure.
Yeah. No, I kind of wish they'd got the guy that, remember that house that they go to,
yeah,
and he's there with the kids. Like, they should have gone to him or something.
Yeah,
like, shown him again.
Her ex instead. Yeah, that would have been a better choice, I think. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, when did Jason Bourne meet her brother?
Off screen somewhere,
I guess.
Yeah.
And it's really just there to give us the, give the exposition to the people who didn't see the first movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. How did she die? She was shot. The end. Which we complained about last time, and I'm still not happy that they killed her, but anyway.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. It's people who didn't see the second movie, not the first movie.
Right. If you didn't see the first movie, you're really confused at this point.
Almost as confused as Jason Bourne. Okay, so my question.
Mm-hmm.
King Viserys, he's writing this series of articles.
Mm-hmm.
And I see you have notes about this as well. He doesn't make the CIA notice until he makes a phone call and mentions the project, Blackbriar.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But he's written articles that are intriguing enough about this for Jason Bourne to call him.
Yes.
Why was he not already on the CIA's radar for this?
Right. Yes, exactly. I mean... He's writing, what is it, looks like a three-part expose on Jason Bourne. I don't know where he's clearly getting information. Like, at this point, the public still should not know who Jason Bourne is.
Right.
So, yeah, they would absolutely be watching this guy. Because, yeah, how would he know any of this stuff? He only tips it off because he mentions Blackbriar on the phone. I'll just say now, the Blackbriar stuff is interesting, and I like the tie back to the first movie when it's thrown out there as a kind of a throwaway line. At the end of that movie, having Jason Bourne a part of it makes no sense to me.
Yeah, why was it necessary to add another project to and not just keep with Treadstone?
Well, because Brian Cox disbanded it.
Of course. Okay.
Or did he?
Dun dun dun.
Well, he just renamed it Blackbriar.
And I know. So did we in 2007?
Mm-hmm.
Did we have computer algorithms listening to every phone call for keywords?
I doubt it, especially British nationals that we have no ties to the United States.
Yeah, like, I believe...
They're one of our allies, so...
Yeah, like,
There's a lot of stuff, like, did they have access to Waterloo closed-circuit television cameras in the CIA and all that stuff that I have questions about, too, but... Yes.
Like, because the assumption here is the CIA is listening to literally every cell phone call ever made anywhere on the planet, and they've got a sophisticated computer that's flagging the specific calls that include the words they're looking for. Now, that the technology to listen to the call and flag for a computer to flag words in a call, and that exists today for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It might have existed in 2007. I'm not actually sure on that.
Yeah.
But the idea that the CIA could have access to every phone call in the world in real time seems a bit far-fetched.
I agree. Yeah.
It seems far-fetched today, and it certainly seems far-fetched back then.
Yeah.
15 years ago? No.
Mm-mm. Well, then there'd be no movie. So,
okay.
it's the only implausible thing that happens in this movie.
Oh, yeah, only one. Oh, yeah, no, I'm going to complain about a thing that has bothered me ever since I saw it in the theater and that you noted in your notes is not as bad as something that happened in Bond.
Yes, I was wondering if that was what it was going to be.
But we'll get to that in a bit.
Yeah. Here's where we're introduced to David Strathairn, who I'm always a fan of him. I'm glad he's in. He's probably the best thing that comes out of this additional, layer of the onion, I guess, that if you want to call it that, this Blackbriar thing, is that he gets to be in the movie as kind of the Brian Cox replacement.
Yeah, no, I like him in this movie.
Yeah, and it's a good role for him.
Mm-hmm.
And they're listening to this call that Paddy Considine placed. And they're already talking about they want to rendition the guy for mentioning the project.
Like, wow, and that's
yeah,
going to zero from 0 to 60 pretty quick.
Yep. I do have to point out we were Thad might not know this because he hasn't listened to the next to the previous episode yet, but we went on a long discussion about Sony Trinitron monitors in the last episode because they were very prominent, and it's nice to see that they've been upgraded to flat panels in this
technically CIA Sony Trinitrons here. Were flat.
Well, yes, but you know what I mean.
And which we probably talked about in that.
Yeah, we did. That was their claim to fame is that they were flat.
Yes, now we have mid-2000s LCD screens, which yep. Look fine in a business setting. It's not. It's mostly unremarkable to me. The part that, like, there's a scene late in the movie where we see an early widescreen LCD TV that has an enormous chin. And I yep. remember, like, looking at that and, like, stirred a memory. It's like, I forgot TVs looked like that for, like, 3 years.
Yep, they did. I had one that wasn't quite that bad, but it definitely had the big chin at the bottom. I mean, it was like a 32-inch TV. I mean, the one in this movie looks like an iMac, only it's not yeah. an iMac.
I went from having like a 27-inch CRT to having no actual TV for a few years and just using my computer monitor to the period when larger LCDs actually became affordable. So I skipped the chin period.
Okay.
I was in 2007, I was broke and was still using a CRT.
27 inch CRT. That must've weighed a lot.
Oh, it did.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. This was back in the day when you had special furniture just to be able to support your yes. television. I mean, you still have TV stands today, but it's not sure. the same thing. You could also just put a TV on a bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
You could not do that with a CRT.
Not if you wanted to stay intact for a long period of time. Yeah.
And let me tell you, that 27-inch CRT that I had, I had actually gotten for free. I had picked it up from literally off the street corner. Or off the curb. Someone had put out their TV because they had gotten a new one, and I picked it up.
Picked it up, threw it in the back of your car or whatever, and
wheelbarrow. Used a wheelbarrow.
Oh, wheelbarrow. Yes. America. I mean, you didn't just carry it home.
I am not that strong.
A lot of glass in those.
Oh yeah, but yes, we have LCDs in this movie.
Yeah,
and we have Motorola Razors.
We do. We had them last time too, and we have like HD screens on these again, which
is not
how those screens.
No,
look.
They had like those screens were like 320p or something.
And like one of the things that bugs me, and they did this in the last movie, is the way it sounds like a communicator almost when they open and close it. Like they didn't do that.
They didn't make noise. No,
they didn't chirp.
I will say this is similar. When we watched Casino Royale, I made the comment that watching movies from the mid-2000s, you sort of everything feels pretty modern until you see a cell phone.
Yes.
And it's the same in this one. Like when Bourne goes to a freaking internet cafe to look something up on and like, oh, yeah. Right.
Well, he does that in every movie, practically.
Yeah, I know, but it's just like, oh, yeah, right. This was before, well, actually, before you probably could on those HD Razors, but.
Yeah, but why would you?
Yeah. I actually did have internet on my flip phone in this period.
Me too. It was terrible.
It was a painful experience, but I did it.
Well, and I remember, like, always going like, oh, shoot, I accidentally tried to load a web page. This is going to be expensive.
Oh, that's no. Because I actually like paid for.
Oh.
Because I at the time I was working at I was working as a baker in a grocery store overnight. So like, on like my break or whatever, there was nothing else to do, and I actually did like, catch up on some of the this is also dating the period catch up on some of the web forums that I was part of back then, and like would actually browse the internet. browse the internet.
I think I remember you telling me that you listened to audio versions of The West Wing.
That was a little later. That was No, that was around the same time.
But it was while you were working, right?
Yeah, it was around the same time. Yeah, I would listened to audio version. I would, but that was on my iPod, obviously, not on the.
Okay. Yeah.
But yes, I ripped West Wing episodes, the audio out of West Wing, and put them on my iPod and listened to it because The West Wing is like mostly just the dialogue. The visuals don't matter that much.
Peak Aaron Sorkin right there. Where you don't even need to see what's happening. It's like Shakespeare. You just need to read the words.
Also, that was also when I first discovered podcasts.
Hmm.
Back in the day when podcast actually meant things you downloaded on your computer and put on your iPod.
iPod. The term. Yes, yes. Yeah, we were talking about how they're going to rendition Simon Ross, Paddy Considine here for mentioning Blackbriar on a phone call.
Right, yes.
And I enjoy Jason Bourne doing Jason Bourne things where he calls Ross but on a different phone line because he thinks that he's going to be tapped.
And he's right. Yeah.
And he's right.
I love everything that Jason Bourne does in this whole sequence.
Yes. Yeah.
And I hate that. What is the actual character's name?
Simon Ross.
Simon Ross just like is like, no, I'm going to do this instead. It's like this guy has obviously been keeping you from dying this whole time.
Yep.
You were an idiot.
Well, and he ends up getting shot.
Yep.
But no, the whole cat and mouse thing at the train station is great.
Yeah, and the thing at the bus station where he makes him look like he's talking to the guy. So
I feel bad for the blue hoodie guy.
Yeah, I know, right?
Stand next to this guy and turn around. And
how did he know that the door was going to be open in the liquor store?
I don't know. Social engineering, maybe? Who knows?
But yes.
Do they have liquor stores in train stations? I guess in England.
In England, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
This was filmed there. It looks like they're all on location.
Why wouldn't they have liquor stores in train stations?
Yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't here in Pennsylvania, but that's...
True. Oh, yeah. The moment where he goes and buys the prepaid phone, that's also a very of its time moment.
You can still buy prepaid phones, but yeah, not at a stand in a train station.
No.
You'd be able to buy a SIM card,
mm-hmm.
but not an actual phone. And for those listening to this podcast in the US, no, I know you wouldn't be able to buy a SIM card here, but that is a thing in Europe.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if Ross had just listened to Bourne, like, at least a couple times, so he thinks that the garbage guy is gonna do something, and he's not, and that's how they find him again, and he's hiding behind a door, and he decides, to heck with Bourne, I'm gonna try to make a run for it, and he gets shot in the head.
Mm-hmm.
Not the best place to pull an op like that, I guess, but...
No, that's a really bad place to pull an op.
Yeah, and I'm glad that Joan Allen calls him out on it later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because no, that's just a bad thing to do in general. How did this not become an international incident?
You assassinated one of our people.
A British citizen in the UK. Yeah, imagine if that happened in real life.
Oh, man. Bourne goes to the internet cafe again. Well, he stole Ross's notebook after he got it shot.
It's so much easier for them to film computer screens now that they're LCDs.
Yeah. You don't have to adjust the frame rate.
The refresh rate. But
The refresh rate, yeah. I mean, well, the frame rate on the camera or the refresh rate. Probably easier to do the refresh rate, but yeah.
You do in a way, but not. It doesn't matter as much. But also, it's easier to film. It looks better on camera.
Mm-hmm.
Also because they look better on the eyes. They exist, CRT purists. They're wrong. Now, there are some LCD or other screen technologies are better than others, but for simple clarity of the image, you are never getting it's never going to look as good on a CRT. Just because when you're up close next to a screen, like on a computer, yeah, mm-hmm. it's just never.
Nope. No, I'm with you. But you don't get to degauss a LCD screen, so.
True, you don't. You also don't get to, like, do weird things with the geometry of the image.
Oh, the keystoning?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could never, ever get it quite square.
Quite either. Right. There's always a dead spot on your screen.
There's always a corner that was never quite filled in.
Yep.
Yep.
Paraphrase some Anthon Rutherford CRTs.
I hate pears again. They're so mealy and bland. Pears.
I disagree with him on pears. I love pears.
No, I like pears too. All right. So Bourne goes to the internet cafe. He makes some magical leaps here with his deductive work. He's going through Ross's notes, finds some reference to some company. And there's multiple locations, but he happens to note that he should go to Madrid for some reason. And we're off to Madrid, because that's where...
Yeah, because they've also got one in Buenos Aires and one in
Sydney.
Sydney. I mean,
this one's the closest, but...
Yeah.
To the UK, I guess, but...
I'll give them credit for having a realistic-looking website instead of, doing some Mission Impossible bullshit.
Mm-hmm. No, that looked like a real website from the early 2000s.
Honestly, I've seen websites like that today.
True.
To be fair, some of them have probably been up since the mid-2000s.
That's true, too. Landy and Vosin go to brunch or whatever, briefly, and they both have a very different way of going about things, and they clearly have a history that they don't really let us into here.
I'm confused about him ordering the heart-healthy omelet with cheese.
With goat cheese?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is goat cheese somehow not fat?
Maybe goat cheese has less cholesterol in it. I don't know. Maybe? Goat cheese and peppers seems like a really crappy omelet to me.
Yes.
I do like when she gets mad at him and leaves and says, enjoy your egg whites, which I think is a nice little...
Goat cheese has less fat than cheese is made from cow's milk.
Okay.
Nevertheless, you should still consume in moderation, according to WebMD. Goat cheese is a good source of selenium.
I didn't know I needed it.
That's what I was about to say after that. I was like, I honestly didn't know selenium was something that my body craved. Like electrolytes.
Yeah.
Selenium it helps your body break down peroxides, which can lower your risk of developing cancer, thyroid disease, or cardiovascular disease.
Okay.
So, okay, goat cheese is heart healthy in a way, I suppose.
Well, that's all those free radicals that M was worried about in that one Sean Connery movie.
Yeah. Well, that is apparently what kills everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, so peroxides are actually really bad for you.
Mm-hmm. So don't dye your hair yellow.
Nope. So yeah, the CIA is now going after Ross, and they think, or they've gone through Ross's stuff, and they think that Bourne is involved with him in some way, because well, obviously they saw him together.
I mean, that's a fair assumption.
Landy makes the very obvious leap that he's not the source of the info, because why would Bourne meet with him again in the UK?
I mean, that is somewhat accurate. I mean, it does make sense. Yeah, why would he need to meet with him right away again in the UK?
Right, exactly.
Like, need to call him and meet him immediately.
Mm-hmm.
That does make a certain amount of sense.
And I like the detective work here where they're like, well, let's look at everyone whose cell phones were turned off completely, and they narrow it down to three people, and they settle on this Neil Daniels guy because they find his initials in the notes.
That's a leap.
It's a leap that they somehow scanned every piece of paper in Ross's apartment.
Yeah, there's that too.
Also, Ross has about five different handwritings in this movie, but we'll let that go. Well, and ND could not possibly mean something else.
Nope.
Maybe he's talking about North Dakota or something. Who knows?
Neurodivergence.
So Bourne goes to the address he found at the internet cafe, which is the office that we saw Neil Daniels packing up earlier. And conveniently, a photograph is left behind of Neil Daniels and Albert Finney, who's name I don't remember. It doesn't really matter.
Well, it's a name that almost sounds like Albert Finney, as I recall. Like,
I think it's... Oh, yeah, I think his first name is Albert, actually. We see more dunk tank flashbacks here, where they're torturing Bourne. Meanwhile, he sees that there's a CIA team about to break into the... Or go into the place.
Yeah, it's Albert Hirsch.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Albert. Okay.
So that is why it sounds like Albert. Yep. Because it is Albert.
It is Albert. Okay.
And I should have remembered Hirsch because the subtitles kept saying Dr. Hirsch over and over again.
Oh. Yeah, I agree with your note. I like the putting a flashlight on a fan.
Yeah.
Thing. I don't quite get the video camera on a gun thing or why they would need screens to see what the gun is filming.
That was interesting.
Yeah. The flashlight on a fan trick works and Bourne beats the crap out of these two guys.
Bourne beats the crap out of a lot of people in this movie.
He does, yeah. And then Julia Stiles turns up and one of Bourne's lines to her is, "What are you doing here?" And I want to know exactly the same thing, because why is she there?
She happened to be inside there.
She is stationed where the plot demands it to be, exactly. I guess.
Because it makes it easier for the whole movie to work.
I suppose. And she decides to help Jason Bourne escape. I like his little trick here where he calls 911 or whatever the Spanish equivalent is, and then shoots the gun a few times, and then they arrest all the guys coming in with guns.
Yes, that
as they escape.
He uses the police to great effect multiple times in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like when he gets them into a firefight in New York, that worked out well.
Yeah. And so then we find out from this meeting here with Landy and Vosin that Blackbriar is this umbrella program for Black Ops. And basically, David Strathairn can do whatever he wants whenever he wants to.
That seems bad.
Seems like a bad idea.
Also, I feel like I've heard this plot before.
Oh, a few times, yeah.
Like, this definitely came up in Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Admittedly, those films were made after this film, but
true. But like this is definitely of its time. This is absolutely George W. Bush era stuff.
Oh yeah.
And now we get a scene with Bourne and Nikki. I would think that if she was familiar with, well, she knows Neil Daniels because she works for him. Mm-hmm. And she apparently is familiar with Noah Vosin because he says his name and she's like, okay, I know who you are. And she has a history with Bourne, which I have issues with because I didn't need that. You'd think she would know who Albert Finney was, too.
You'd think, yes.
Because she's pretty involved in all, like, it sounds like she actually brought him in to this program in a way. But we find out that, or actually, Nikki knows that Neil Daniels went off to Tangier to hide out for a bit.
Because he wired money there.
Which is conveniently very close to Spain, so we can go there on a boat really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's on, so I guess they're holding up the money because they want to assassinate this Neil Daniels. Like, they're just trying to kill everybody that's involved in this at this point. Which seems excessive, but...
Yeah, I don't know.
Bad guys are going to bad guy.
Yeah, so. Exactly. There are a lot of... Yeah. There isn't much difference between the various the operatives that go after Bourne, really.
Mm-mm. So, like, are these Treadstone guys that are now part of Blackbriar? Or, well, I thought in the last movie he goes to that guy in Germany and they're like, we're the last two Treadstone people.
That's true. I don't know.
So, these are new. Which is why I was saying, like, the whole idea where they keep saying about how Jason Bourne was the starting point for Blackbriar makes no sense to me. Because when was he the first Blackbriar person? When he was he part of Treadstone then? Was he recruited out of that? Was, you know, I don't know. They're trying to set up another shady organization to go after.
Yep.
But it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
No, and they don't really give us enough detail, I don't think.
Mm-mm.
But
I don't really need it. But
really, we just have to know Bourne needs to fight the bad guys.
David Strathairn is trying to kill everybody, basically, because he go after, because then he adds Nikki Parsons to the list.
Yeah, he just wants to kill. Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous.
Oh, I skipped over the comical product placement of Norton Utilities when she opens her laptop in the hotel room in Tangier, and they show a Norton virus scan before she actually does anything.
And do people even use, like, is that even a thing anymore that most people
probably
do?
Not
like, because like it's built into Windows now.
I mean, I remember installing it.
Oh, yeah. Back in the day, you always needed to.
You had that little traffic light in your system tray.
You always needed to have a virus, antivirus for a long time. But, like, I haven't run an actual third-party antivirus on a PC in years.
Yeah. So if you go to, like, 51 minutes and 40 seconds, you get a Symantec splash screen.
At least it wasn't McAfee. Didn't he kill somebody, the guy that founded McAfee?
Maybe.
Yeah, you're right, that's Symantec.
Yeah,
you know, John McAfee, he like murdered somebody. Oh. Didn't he? Well, wow. John McAfee was a British-American computer programmer, businessman, and two-time presidential candidate.
Wow.
Well, kind of. He unsuccessfully sought the libertarian nomination in 2016 and 2020.
Oh, okay.
He was arrested for tax evasion, but I feel like he murdered somebody. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, okay. Maybe he didn't murder anybody. He hit the section of... Oh, wait, no. Hold on. It's a whole separate section from his legal issues.
Oh.
Yeah. He was never... the police in Belize... named him as a person in interest in connection to a homicide investigation of an American expat who was found dead of a gunshot wound at his home. I can't tell if that's his home or McAfee's home.
Yeah.
But yes, apparently, yes, he never went back to Belize, apparently, so, like, but yeah, yeah, he was never convicted of murder, but yes, he probably killed somebody. Anyway, sorry for that.
You're just trying to put off the jump, discussing the jump.
No, let's get to it, because
Yeah. So I like this fake out, though, that they do with the bike, where...
Yes!
Bourne is trying to stop them from blowing up the Daniel's guy.
Yeah, because he thinks it's the
duffel bag. The duffel that he bag drops.
On the street, but it's actually the bike. So what would have happened if he hadn't stopped him?
Well, I was going to say, it's sure is lucky that Bourne stops his car right next to the bike.
Yeah.
Or unlucky, I guess, for poor Mr. Daniels here.
Yeah.
Also, this is the first time of three or four times in this movie where Bourne's dead, because I don't think he survives that explosion.
Oh, did you see the screen describing where it's when Bourne is looking at the CIA file on Desch, where it lists his various contact code lists, and it's Stone Blue is terminate with extreme prejudice, River Red is discretion required, Grass Green is accidental death. That one's obviously a little bit of a joke.
That's
there.
An in-joke, yeah.
Alpha Paper is suicide. Key Bravo is build case termination scenario. Blue Sky is proceed. Look Back is contact handler. Okay, none of the other ones are funny. But, yeah, it's just interesting that tiny little Grass Green is surely a joke to...
Yeah. To the director. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was just after the semantic screen.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, those.
And here's where Bourne steals a motorcycle and does a jump.
A jump that is not plausible.
No.
And
it's not. It's not that high considering the one we see in James Bond.
Yeah, that doesn't make this better.
No.
No, I just remember watching this in the theater and seeing that and being like, no way.
Yeah.
Because he jumps up off a broken curb that makes the tiniest ramp in the world and jumps mm-hmm. up like an entire person height, basically.
Yep.
Yeah, no, that's not possible. He would have crashed into that wall.
Mm-hmm. That would be a less interesting movie. Meanwhile, Nikki pulls apart her phone to leave a little trail, which isn't much of a trail, but
not we'll really. Go with it. Yeah, there's some high-res images on that Motorola screen.
Mm-hmm. Which I don't think that screen could do that.
It could do pictures.
No, I had one.
But yeah, they weren't that. No, they were not that detailed. I had a whole bunch of MIDI ringtones on mine.
Oh, I miss those. No, I don't. We get a fairly long rooftop chase running through these buildings to try to catch up to where Nikki is. This fight scene to me is terrible because of the shaky cam and the editing.
Shaky cam is so bad in this sequence.
Yeah. I mean, I do like the continuation of Bourne using household objects as weapons where he beats up the guy with a book. Mm-hmm. And eventually he strangles him in the bathroom. But yeah, just shaky cam is just, it's so far beyond what it needs to be.
It makes it legitimately hard to watch at points.
Yep.
Mm-mm. Anyway, I started to say James Bond. James Bourne.
James Bourne.
Jason Bourne. How's he doing?
Yep. Well, he's having another confessional to Nikki here about seeing people that he murdered. They have some cutbacks. I like the shot of the Wombosi folder to remind us that, oh yeah, that was the first movie. There's a very obvious flash or callback to the first movie when she dyes her hair and cuts it and all yes. that stuff. In fact, I think that's why there's a shot of him looking at her.
Oh, for sure.
It's probably, it's, yeah. But then we put her on a bus and get rid of her for the rest of the movie, so who cares?
Hey, but at least she doesn't die.
That's true. That happens later.
Does it?
I think she dies in the last movie.
Oh, I don't remember. I honestly don't remember much at all about the last movie.
Now we're back in New York, and Bourne gets to New York.
And we get to the end of the last movie.
End of the second movie, yeah. And now we know that the birth date comment that she makes is really a code.
Mm-hmm.
And I highly doubt that the entire office in the CIA is going to go mobile and go after that Jason seemed, Bourne.
Yes, ridiculous. And I mean, there are other people in the office because he calls his one henchman. And you make a very good point, which I also had this problem. I kept confusing his assistant and her assistant.
Yeah, they have the same hairline. And they look very similar. Yeah.
So, like, at first, I honestly thought, oh, crap, is he betraying her at this point? I'm like, mm-hmm. no, that's not the same guy. It wasn't until her assistant picked her up in the car. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yes, okay. I'm glad it wasn't just me. This moment is great, though, when Bourne calls Noah Vosin on the phone and...
Noah Vosin.
This is Jason Bourne.
I was wondering when you were going to make this call.
How did you get this number? You didn't actually think I was coming to Tudor City, did you?
No, I guess not. But if it's me you want to talk to, perhaps we can arrange a meet.
Where are you now?
I'm sitting in my office.
I doubt that.
And why would you doubt that?
If you were in your office right now, we'd be having this conversation face to face.
Yeah, that was excellent.
And he hangs up on him. Like, that's a great moment. Mythbusters has shown that you cannot get a fingerprint, a usable, scannable fingerprint with scotch tape, but we'll let that go too.
What does Mythbusters say about shooting a glass door?
I don't know. I'm sure they've done it, though.
Surely. But, like, I feel like there should have been easier ways to open that door rather than shooting it.
Well, I like how he shoots it and then gets, like, a hat stand or something to break
right.
the
why
rest
not
of the
just
glass.
Do that
like,
the
why don't
first
you just
time.
Do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If the glass can withstand hitting, like, a club hitting it, then it's probably bulletproof as well.
Yeah. Also, there's probably one of those boxes with a fire hatchet nearby.
Mm-hmm. I imagine OSHA would make you have to have a way to get out of that room.
Yes. Well, yeah, but that would be on the inside.
Well, yeah, but they're inside a room. They'd have to be able to have some sort of egress from that room, right?
Were they stuck in that room, or was it...
I think that's what it seemed like.
Oh, I thought it was... Okay, yeah, that makes more sense. You're right. For some reason, I was thinking that was the room to the office, but okay.
No, that was the room out of the office.
Got it, okay.
I will say I appreciate that they actually filmed this in New York. You can tell if you've ever been to New York, this is definitely New York.
Yes,
this is, I have been to New York. This is the Port Authority building.
It does, yeah, it... The street scenes clearly are actually New York, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think the roof parking garage is New York. I think that's faked.
That's probably a soundstage, yeah.
Yeah. Here's the second moment in the movie where Bourne dies when he somehow ramps off of that parking garage.
Well, not wearing a seatbelt, but just having, like, grabbed the seatbelt to hold on to.
Well, no, that's later.
Oh, you're right.
Okay. That's when he crashes the police car. That's another moment where he's dead.
When he should have died, yes.
Yeah. I don't know where the ramp came from that he obviously goes over. Yeah.
Yeah, when he drove backwards off, I'm like, oh, you're like, I've seen the movie, and I know there are more movies. So I'm like, I know he didn't just, like, plummet to his death, but what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, I like that... Vosid even says that. The guy's like, he drove off the roof, and he's like, what?
Yeah.
Here's where he starts the firefight with the police and steals their car, because they're really bad at being police.
The door open. To be fair, I guess you'd have to.
Yeah, they are.
I just wondered, I was waiting for the moment when a bunch of other police were going to join this chase, and it never happened. The car chase.
No.
Like, there's no way they didn't drive past a bunch of other cop cars during this process.
True. I mean, there's also remarkably little traffic.
Yeah, that, as we've established, I've been to New York, and that is not accurate for New York traffic.
No. We get a bit of a reversal here of the end of the second movie where Edgar Ramirez drives him into the pillar. And yeah, this is another moment where Bourne is dead.
Oh, for sure.
I think Bourne would have been dead if he actually had buckled his seatbelt, but he
certainly
just like wraps himself up in a seatbelt and holds on to
it. Yeah, that doesn't work.
No, that's not how seatbelts work. Like, you need the buckle.
Because mm-hmm. it's not going to have
plays
the,
a very
it's
important
not going to have
part.
The tension. It's not.
No.
Yeah.
No.
The way a seatbelt works is it is tense. It is like it mm-hmm. will not move in that instance mm-hmm. and it holds you in place. Yeah. If you're just wrapping it around you, it's not going to do that.
Because you were going to let go of it.
Yeah.
He is not as strong as a seatbelt.
There's a reason when people are in car accidents, they will often have a very pronounced seatbelt rash on their chest from when the seatbelt dug into their flesh.
Yes. And prevented them from flying through the windshield or whatever. Yeah. Fun fact, this building that Landy told Bourne to go to, 415 East 71st Street, is part of the complex where I went to graduate school.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Is it actually at 415 East 71st Street?
Yeah.
Okay. So that building is the actual 415 East 71st Street.
I believe so.
That is cool.
And the building that he jumps off of at the very end is part of New York Presbyterian Hospital, which is attached to my graduate school and the medical school there. So
cool.
The Weill Cornell Medical conglomerate is featured in this movie in some way.
That's cool.
Now, whether or not he actually goes into that building, I don't know.
Right.
But they show a York Avenue street sign at one point and everything. So that actually is where they sent him. And I do appreciate that, like I said, the building he jumps off of is the building that would be there.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't just put him in a random location. I mean, I will have to take issue with the fact that he had a car chase at the Port Authority building and then somehow got to the upper East Side very quickly. Cause the Port Authority is on like 34th Street, I think. And
well, they had a miracle
the west side of
on 34th and, Street.
That's true. They well done. So Landy faxes all of the Blackbriar materials, I guess, to the media or somebody.
Yeah, it doesn't really say who.
No.
But I assume, yes, media.
Mm-hmm.
I like how he first shows up and he kind of has like a look of triumph. He's like, I caught you. And then he sees that she just finished faxing all this info.
Yeah, the last page goes through and, oh, crap.
And I'd like to say that using a fax machine for this dates the movie, but people still use fax machines for this, mm-hmm. amazingly enough.
They do. Yeah. It's very unfortunate because every time I run into one, I'm like, how do I send this now? Because.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time I had when I still had a landline phone for work. I had a USB modem that I would plug into my computer and I could use it to send a fax.
Mm-hmm.
But who has a landline anymore?
Right. I don't.
Actually, a lot of people do, but.
Well, yeah.
Most of them aren't the people that are sending faxes. Most people that still use a landline stopped using new technology in the 70s.
All right. So now we get the confrontation here with Albert Finney.
Yeah. I like how this goes.
Yeah. I like the idea. Like, you volunteered for this. The whole test of you have to shoot this person who you don't even know who it is like his final exam, I guess, in a way.
And that feels like a trope that I've seen mm-hmm. a lot of other places.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I do like, yes, the twist, finding out that, yes, he did volunteer for this in the beginning, even if he doesn't mm-hmm. remember it.
Yep.
And then he doesn't kill him because he doesn't deserve it.
Doesn't deserve to be memorialized, so I'm not going to
yep.
kill you here. And I sort of like the implication here is that David Webb is not exactly a nice person.
Right.
You wouldn't, you know, and he sort of reinvented who he is through the course of this experience he's had.
Yeah. And Jason Bourne is actually the better one. Yeah.
Yep. Right. When we have this little epiphany here, Edgar Ramirez shows up, chases him out of the building. I like the callback to the scene with Clive Owen from the first movie. Mm-hmm. With the line,
"Why didn't you take the shot? Do you even know why you're supposed to kill me? Look at us. Look at what they make you give."
Edgar Ramirez is confused, like, why didn't... Because Bourne had a chance to shoot him after the car accident and didn't. And that's what gets him to let him go. And
yeah, he said, "Do you even know why you're supposed to kill me?"
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, what are we doing? I don't think I necessarily needed the whole, like, did Noah Vosen shoot him thing.
Yeah.
Although I will say Jason Bourne is dead again from jumping into the East River.
Yeah, but they never found his body.
No. I mean, if the fall didn't kill him, the East River would have killed him. So,
yes. They do, in fact, tell you not to go into the East River.
They do. But yeah, they have that newscast at the very end. And the last thing is that they've been unable to find Jason Bourne's body. And he immediately swims away after having another parallel to the beginning of the first movie with him floating in the water.
And because this is before the existence of the MCU, there is no after credit.
Yes, correct.
I wasn't sure. I fast forwarded through the whole credits just to make sure.
Well, I mean, Airplane had an after credit,
yeah.
So no, that was 1980, I think.
There were
movies
that had after credits at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, it wasn't completely impossible. Unpossible.
Me fail English? That's impossible.
Thank you so much for listening to us this week. If you'd like to contact us, you can find us on Twitter at Podspiel. You can also find this episode and all back episodes of the show on our website, licensedtospiel.com. That's license with a C. And you can also find me on Twitter at Listening to Film.
And you can find me on Twitter at Tyrannicus.
You can also find both Thad and me on Mastodon and Blue Sky at the same handles as the artist formerly known as Twitter. License to Spiel will return next time with The Bourne Legacy.